Three things I love about myself. One, my hair. After experimenting with different styles, I've come to love it for the many ways it can transform, for the story it is always telling. Two, my skin. It is dark brown and looks good in yellow and green and any shade of blue and also white and also gray. And its scars heal like no pain ever happened. And it glistens under the sun. And in the winter, it soaks up shea butter and cocoa butter. And this summer it soaked up kisses. So many kisses imprinted in this skin of mine. Three, my mind. It is its own. Even though sometimes it's tempted to change, falter. Deep down, it is sure, made up. Full of ideas and thoughts and sweet memories and an imagination that built faraway places when I was a child. Places I transformed into playgrounds, under tables, in the backseat of the car, on fire escapes, stoops. My mind, it is strong and holds all of who I am. It is still forming and growing, and in so many ways, still the same. My mind, it is expansive. And there is so much room to fill, so much more to know.
Good morning, and welcome to the March edition of Black Book Talk. I'm Emma Jackson Ford, bookwoman, here with
Patricia Hill Welch, librarian emeritus.
And the voice you were just hearing is Portland owned, and I guess New York's also, Renee Watson. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure and a joy to talk with both of you.
Well, I feel like you have been in my house visiting with me for a while this week because I listened to the video edition of your book. So I feel like we've had a long visit and you've just been telling me a great story.
Okay, you're physically in New York, but last night you did a reading at Powell's. And I kept thinking, oh, Renee's in town. I need to go. And I'm going to go, no. That's not happening now. We're living in the world of COVID.
Yes.
Before we talk about the book, just tell me, how has COVID affected you? I mean, you're a writer. You can write anywhere. But just in terms of introducing your book or promoting your book or whatever, how has it affected you?
So in terms of promotion, I mean, you know, it was, especially in the beginning, it was really hard to just wrap my mind around promoting a book at a time when so many people are suffering and life has been turned upside down. I just felt like, you know, this book is not important. And the other book, Ways to Make Sunshine, came out right at the beginning of the pandemic. And so, yeah, I was really conflicted with if I should be promoting or not. But then I remembered and I kept hearing people say, well, people need joy too. And people, you know, need to also have ways to escape and ways to cope and process what's happening. So I hope that my work is doing that for young people and for older readers who are enjoying the stories as well. As far as writing, it was really hard to write during the pandemic. I mean, I've never been the kind of person who can't write. I can always write. Now I get writer's block. I get stuck on stories, you know, but I mean, I couldn't even journal because there was just so much happening. So it took me a while to get out of the, you know, being stuck and the emotional heaviness that was happening, especially last spring. And I just kept leaning into joy. I kept reading poets who I know have survived so much, like Langston Hughes and Nikki Giovanni, Maya Angelou, Lucille Clifton. I just kept reading their words over and over for inspiration for me. Good. And that's how I kept going.
Okay, I'm writing down leaning into joy. I think you still remember that. Okay.
What I said a few minutes ago about video, well, you did a beautiful job with it. It might have been difficult, but you came out like a champ. This book is great. As I was hearing you telling me the story, it was like a movie.
Oh, wow.
And when I had to turn it off and do something for a while, I couldn't wait to get back to the movie. It was very smooth, very joyous, totally, as one of the old readers, I totally enjoyed it. And also, I enjoyed that your characters are a little older this time. Usually, they're kind of middle schoolish. Mm-hmm. This girl is going to be a senior, so I noticed that the characters were older, so they moved into a different kind of maturity.
Yes, it was nice to be with older teenagers and to write a story that takes place in Harlem. You know, most of my stories, like you said, have younger protagonists and take place in Portland. And it was just nice to spend some time with this character who is figuring out who she is. She's very flawed. You know, she is trying to be an activist. She's trying to show up for her family, trying to show up for her friends, and she doesn't quite know how to remain herself in all of that. And I really loved spending time with Nala on the page and letting her have a good, fun summer with lots of dates and summer kisses and outings and enjoying the city. It was fun to write. And I needed that break of writing some of the more serious things that I write. It was nice to write a love story.
Tell us just, you know, I don't want you to give away all the good stuff, but just give us a little outline, a little bit more of the plot so our readers have a sense of who Nala is and what she's confronting.
Sure. So Nala is a 17-year-old Jamaican-American girl, and she falls for an activist whose name is Ty. She reluctantly goes to this open mic and meets him, and she's blown away by he is fine and handsome and all of that. But he's also very nice, and she just notices something different about him. And she's a little intimidated because he volunteers and he does all this community activism. So she thinks she has to put that on to impress him. So she tells a little lie, and that lie snowballs into some bigger, bigger, bigger lies. And as she's trying to unravel herself out of this web that she's tangled, she realizes that really she needs to love herself before she can love anyone else. So I always say that Love is a Revolution is, yes, at its core, it's a love story, but it's also a story about self-love. And how do we, especially as young Black girls, how do we love ourselves, and how do we love our bodies and our hair and our skin tones? And so she's coming into her own in that way as well.
And it's always, you don't make the trying to gather or trying to bring the love interest to the central character be the center of the book. There's more going on in her life. And I love that. And that it's an innocent romance. And it builds, but it builds outward, not just around the core of their love for each other. There are other, real life is going on in the meantime, and really important real life. I love that about your books.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, I mean, we are always carrying many things all at once, right? So Nala has this new budding relationship with Ty, but she also is figuring out her family dynamics. Her mother, she doesn't live with her mother, she lives with her aunt, and it's a complicated relationship that she has with her mom, but they love each other. And so she's figuring that out. Like, how can you receive love from someone who you may wish they could love you better? Her mother is just not good at being a mom. And what does that, how do you hold that as a 17-year-old girl? So she's dealing with that, and she's dealing with her cousin and being compared to her cousin all the time. Her cousin is super smart, good grades. She's an activist. She's out there in the community doing all this volunteering. And I think Nala feels a little intimidated by that. But they love each other and they're best friends. So yeah, I wanted to explore love in its many forms, love of community, love of family, love of a partner, a date, you know, someone you're dating, and love of yourself.
And basically, even though she has a lot to learn, we all do, but basically, as the original list that you read from at the beginning of the show indicates, basically she loves herself. She has that core. And it's so good. And I think you do this very well in your books. I think most of your characters, they have challenges, but these are basically whole, healthy, young women. And we need to see that. I was looking at a conversation that you had. It was on NPR.
Indy.
X.
Ibram.
Ibram X. Kendi. Yes. Yes. Okay. And you said something, he was talking about how his daughter, he really enjoyed the book, Hair Love, his daughter did. And then you said, I think it's important to bring in books that allow readers to see Black people living their everyday lives. We don't want to teach children that Black pain and struggle is the only part of Black life. I think it's also important to just let young people see that Black people live lives and they do their hair and they play outside and they have fun, that that's an important part of the conversation. And I think sometimes in making our point and just acknowledging the strain and the struggle and the tension that Black people have been going through as long as we've been in this country, you know, and continue to go through even to the day. But in the midst of all that, in the background, that people are still holding hands and
yes,
and what I call winking and blinking. and Nikki Giovanni has a poem where she says something like, she hopes that when people write about her, that they yes, will understand that no matter what else, that they loved each other and they were happy. And I think sometimes people miss that. And I love this in this character, that this was a young girl who was a large girl and knew that was okay, because we know that in our community, we don't want everybody to be skinny, you know, and that young Black girls have a much better body image than many young white girls, because in our community, we are larger. But I love that she was happy with herself in that way too.
Thank just, you. Yeah, you know, it is so important to me just to make sure I'm telling a full story of the Black experience. And I want to create stories that are nuanced and even within my body of work that are diverse and different from the last book, right? And so, yeah, I wanted her to already come to the story, like you said, whole. Like she's not trying to, she doesn't think she needs fixing. The things that she does need to work on are not about her body and her loving herself or having self-esteem. And I don't think that that's necessarily like something it's not an ideal situation. I know those girls, right? I know a lot of young women who are just fine with themselves. And it's not until they go out into the world and other people treat them like they're not beautiful or that they're not worthy, that then they start to have issues of self-doubt. But like you said, in our homes, so many times we, you know, I think about how I was raised and I was so loved on by my older siblings, by my mother, the women at my church. I was so nurtured. And so it wasn't until I started really looking at magazines and you know, going out into the larger community that I realized, oh, everybody doesn't believe what my mama believes about me. There are other messages to listen to, and you have to figure out who are you going to listen to. And I wanted Nala to have a community of women who look like her too. So in this book, I really was intentional about making sure she's not the only big character. In so many books, you just have one. And it's like, well, that's not realistic. So, you know, Imani, her cousin, is big. Their mothers are big. Like, it's a real situation. I wanted to really paint what Harlem looks like and yes, what Black life looks like. So thank you for noticing that and bringing that up.
And I loved that you not only mentioned or touched on hair, you do a whole running thing about hair, how we like to change our hair, add hair. I may be braids this month, but next month I might want my hair to be pressed. The next month, I may just want a ponytail the whole time. I loved how you treated the hair, the words you used to describe the hair. Mm. The girl whose hair was so beautiful, not Imani, but Imani's friend.
Toya. Mm.
Toya, who mm, had the beautiful hair. And you said it several times about the way her afro was like a halo. I loved it. You really did justice to the hair.
Thank you. It's such a theme for us, right? And, you know, thinking about Nala trying to figure out what does it mean to be an activist, she's meeting these teenagers who are so passionate and a little self-righteous, a little, you know, they can, sometimes they're doing the most, I think. But she wants to fit in and they're all natural. They're all, you know, they are making a political statement with their hair. And she's like, well, okay, sometimes I can be natural, but can I also diet? Can I also add hair? Like, does that mean I'm less of an activist? And so, yeah, I think that's the age where you kind of start thinking, who do I want to be in the world? How do I want to show up? How am I going to present myself? And what does that mean? Is my body political? And if so, what am I saying to the world? And what are my values? So she's experimenting a lot with her hair, also trying to impress Ty. So it's all of that, you know, all of that adolescent complication of feeling confident. She's very confident in herself, and she's also tested, right? Her confidence is tested, but she always comes back to herself. And I wanted to kind of show that tug of war that sometimes we have within our own selves of trying to fit in and then being okay if you don't, but then really wanting to fit in. I think even as adults, we still kind of struggle with that sometimes.
It's so interesting to be of an age now where I can look back on the civil rights, you know, struggles of the 60s. And it's the same thing in the early 70s. Am I Black enough? What does it mean to be Black? Mm-hmm. Do I have to wear my hair, my clothes, change my attitude, the way I talk, give up proper English? I mean, these are it's cyclical. So yes. And it isn't just teenagers. A whole lot of people, at least I know when I was in my 20s, these were issues. But I want to ask, you are always doing something. No, you're always doing many things. Are you still involved with the I2 Collective? And if so, what are they doing? Because you have a very full plate in terms of your activities.
So no, I have actually been, it's been thankfully a quiet, believe it or not, year for me, partly because of no travel, right? So I've been doing book events, but they've all been virtual. So that is a little less stress. I'm not as tired as I normally am because I'm actually home and I haven't been out and about. So I'm not as busy as I normally am. And it's been good for me. I2 Arts Collective, we ended at the end of 2019. So right before we were coming into 2020, the lease ended and we could not come to an agreement on a new negotiation for that. So the proper nonprofit is no longer. But the people, of course, because they were already doing this work before we gathered to do I2 Arts Collective. So I'm still in touch with them. Everybody is still making arts and writing and performing and working with young people. So I love that even though we're not in that space anymore, we still keep space with each other and hold each other in a different kind of way. And we're all still, I mean, everyone from the board to the staff and the participants are all still doing this work. So it's a beautiful thing to still be a part of that community, even though we're no longer a nonprofit.
I didn't realize it was really so tied just to the building because, it was so many creative people who were there. I'm glad that the spirit has continued.
Yes.
That just means you're all still doing wonderful things.
Okay. Yeah, and we also have a scholarship with Highlights Foundation. We partnered with them. They actually reached out to us. It was such an honor for them to say, you know, we want to honor the work that you all were doing. Can we fund a scholarship program so that we can have an offering for Black women writers to come together once a year at their farm in Pennsylvania? So, of course, we said yes, we announced it, and then COVID happened. So we couldn't have it in 2020, but we're hoping to start that. So we will be doing special projects here and there under the name I2 Arts Collective. Great. Once we're back and, you know, able to do things again and gather.
I know this book is just coming out, but what's next?
So, you know, that's how it is with writing. There are a couple of things that have already been written and are just waiting to be released. So the next book comes out in April 27th. And it's the second
2021?
Yes, this April. I have an early middle grade, the second book of the Ryan Hart series. So the first book was Ways to Make Sunshine, and the second book is Ways to Grow Love. And you talk about joy. Ryan Hart is one of my favorite characters. She is a Ramona-esque kind of character, brown girl who gets herself into all kind of situations. Living in Northeast Portland, playing in Alberta Park, goes to Vernon Elementary School. I used real names this time. You know, normally I place characters in Oregon, but I don't necessarily use the names of real streets or places. But for this, I really wanted to honor what Beverly Cleary did in the Ramona series. And so when I was little and I read Clickitat Street, I was like, what? I know that place. I would, you know, my aunt lives right around the corner. So I really wanted to honor that series by creating a series for Black and brown girls who get to just have fun and ride their bikes and grow into themselves. So that comes out in April. But I wrote it, you know, it's kind of been sitting for a moment. So it's not like I wrote both of them at the same time. Sometimes in publishing, you get a contract for something and you finish a project and it kind of sits for a minute. So
okay, because that was gonna be my question.
I know, I saw it. I saw you looking like what?
Is this just because of COVID? But really, you seem to average about what, a book a year?
Yeah. About a book a year, sometimes two.
But you know what?
This is the thing. I am a writer. I am a full-time writer. So like if I were a doctor and I did a bunch of surgeries in a year, nobody would be like, wow, you do a whole lot of surgeries. Because that's, you know, that's your job. You're supposed to do that. So I am trying to, you know, live up to what my calling is. And I feel like I'm on this earth to tell stories. As long as I have ideas, I'm gonna keep telling them. And I do take breaks. I mean, I especially, you know, thinking about this character, Nala, talking about self-love, self-care. I know sometimes those are buzzwords, but I really do take time for myself, and not in that way of like spa day or vacation, which of course is great. And when I can do that, I do that. But every day I try to care for myself. You know, I start my day off with prayer and some quiet devotion and just center myself for the day, talking to friends, especially during, you know, the times we're living in. I feel like I've reverted to my teenage self and I've been having these long phone calls like back in the day. And my mother probably, you know, would have kicked me off the phone and been fussing at me for being on the phone too long. But it's been nice to just reconnect with people and slow down and really remind myself of who is important and what's important. So yes, I'm creating a lot, but I'm also feeling the well and making sure that I'm taking care of myself too.
And the quality of what you produce is always high. I mean, they didn't just give you that Newbery Award or the Coretta Scott Award, all the other commendations. So, I mean, I know the work is good, but I'm glad to hear you're taking care of yourself too.
Thank you. Yeah, I saw that look you gave me, so I wanted to make sure.
Your work our listeners, top-notch.
We're on a Zoom call, so when she says the look, though you all listening out there, you know, you can just hear us, we actually can see each other.
As I said, your work is top-notch, as usual, and you even gave a nod to us older people. You did an old love relationship.
Yes.
What's his name, Mr. JT?
JT and Grandma, you know, listen... My grandfather, I mean, he lived to be, he was in his 90s when he passed away. And my grandmother had died like so many years before. Like he lived without her for at least 20 years. And that's a long time too. And he was married to her for a long time, right? So, I mean, he never called anyone his girlfriend, but he definitely had friends. And I think that that is beautiful and lovely. And I wanted to also have Nala see a healthy relationship. And so, yeah, there's the grandma and JT who give her so much wisdom, right? And really kind of steer her to get out of this lie and to show up as herself in the world. But also her aunt and uncle who she lives with, you know. I just wanted the men in the book to be the kind of men that I know and the kind of men that helped raise me. So vulnerable men who show their emotions, men who love fiercely, and who really care deeply. So I wanted her to have that so that when she meets Ty, he doesn't rock her world so much and she loses herself in him, because she's used to Black men being amazing and he's not the first one that she's met, right? You know, she has her uncle, she has JT, she has men in the community who love her and who are role models. And so Ty is just an addition to that, not kind of an exception to some rule that she has about Black men. So I was very intentional about including healthy relationships where we can see Black men and Black women loving each other.
I loved it. I loved as well that you tackled a very difficult thing in families, that applying for college, that long process, and the procrastinators among us who drug our feet when we needed to be writing that college essay, and the way this family handled that.
Yeah, she's so intimidated by Imani that I think maybe she's even scared to start. So, you know, her cousin, who has already written her essay and has a list of her top schools and second choices and third choices. And Nala's like, I don't even know what I want to study. I don't even know if I want to go to college, first of all. So yeah, you know, they're the same age and they live in the same home. And so many times you just get compared to your siblings or a family member or even your friends. And I wanted that part of the story to be in it too. I think it's good in some ways that they kind of hopefully balance each other out, because Imani needs to learn some things from Nala and, you know, the other way around too. So I was trying to show that dynamic in families where we can learn from each other and forgive each other. She's learning how to forgive and how to be okay with being who she is and not comparing herself to her cousin.
You know, it's never enough time for our conversations with you. And I'm glad that you write a lot of books. So that means you have a lot of reasons to come back. So I just want to say thank you for always telling the rest of the story that is not frequently enough told. Thank you for presenting a whole and healthy image of the young people in our community. And I'm just going to be looking forward to our next conversation. It's just an unending stream.
Thank you. Thank you. I love you both. I appreciate your support from book one. You have always, always supported me, and I thank you for that.
And we love you and the characters that you keep introducing us to. Keep it coming.
I just want to say this is the first live Black Book Talk that we've done in a year. And it might not have happened, one, if Renee hadn't come to town, but also if Ken Jones hadn't stepped up and said, you know, that he would do, which is, we're doing a Zoom call. It's all like magic to me. But at any rate, Ken, we want to thank you for stepping up and helping us to get back on the air. We always love Ray Bodwell, who is our usual engineer. We love all the techie people who keep things going, but thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken. All right, that's it for March. We look forward to seeing you in April. And until then, keep reading.